It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. A very happy Monday to everybody out there. It is the week of preseason getting underway. The Jazz will have their first game coming up against the Phoenix Suns on Saturday, so I wanted to get an episode recorded as we start to really get ready for the kickoff for the 2020-2021 NBA season. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. You can read me at KSLSports.com. Follow KSL Sports at KSL Sports on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. Get all of my stories, all the latest information on the Utah Jazz uploaded there. And especially download the podcast now for KSL Sports. Just search in the app KSL Sports, or in your app store, I should say. Really easy to download. Get going. Again, you'll have all these podcasts and all my articles delivered right to you. So really easy way to get to it through the KSL Sports app. All right, what I want to do today, I want to look a little bit at the Jazz upcoming schedule. We'll look at the roster breakdown, what they're entering the season with, what they're missing, what they do have, and then I'll try and answer your questions in the mailbag like I do at the end of every single one of these podcasts. So thanks again for tuning in. The Jazz start up with two games against the Phoenix Suns coming up on the 12th of December. Again, I mentioned that Saturday. Then they play again on Monday. Those are both home games. Neither are going to have fans in the stands. In fact, I don't think media is even going to be allowed to go to the games during the preseason. That will change come the regular season, both for fans and the media. I know 1,500 Jazz fans are going to be there to begin the season. At least that's the hope. We'll have to see where the numbers are with coronavirus, but that's not going to affect Jazz fans really until the 26th of December, the day after Christmas. But Phoenix should be cool. It should be a good test for the Utah Jazz. They've always struggled with Chris Paul. Everyone struggles with Chris Paul. That's why he's a Hall of Famer. And I think it's going to be fun to see what this team looks like, assuming Mike Conley's back. Remember, he missed the first few days of Jazz practice because he has been in quarantine. He doesn't have coronavirus. That's what he told us on the media call on Thursday. Maybe it was Friday. But he was in close contact with somebody who did. So he has to have a certain number of clean tests that come back negative before he can be released, and he was hoping that today would be the day. I've been checking Instagram. The Jazz didn't do media day today. They did their big media day yesterday for all the people who work for the Jazz to make sure they get all their things recorded for the rest of the season. So we didn't even really get to talk to the players yesterday. We did a little bit for the rookies, but they took today off as a result of yesterday being so busy for everybody on the roster. So Phoenix should be a good game. I mentioned Chris Paul, the difficulty there. What does Mike Conley look like coming back if he's back and ready to go with the team? And he probably should be at that point. And then, obviously, the addition of Derek Favors. Does that help the Jazz solve some of their issues? Now, neither of these teams is going to be going all out in the first preseason game, especially when they're going to face each other again in 2 days. And then we know that everyone's just trying to stay safe, make it through this crazy season we're about to go through. So you might not see the starters play a whole lot in general, but you don't have, you know, 5 or 6 preseason games like you do most years. You have 3. So any issues you do have, you're going to want to work out pretty quick and pretty early because the season's going to come fast and there's going to be a lot of games really quickly. It's going to be harder to fix things on the floor. So maybe you do see a few extended minutes here in these preseason games. You want to see if the Jazz perimeter defense looks any better than it did against the Denver Nuggets. Remember, they struggled so badly with Jamal Murray. Felt like he averaged 50 points a game in that series when the Jazz lost the 3-1 lead in the first round of the postseason. Devin Booker's every bit as capable of doing that. And now that he has Chris Paul next to him, he should be even better. Are the Jazz able to stay at home better because they have that good second defensive player in Derek Favors down low that allows the perimeter defensive wings for the Jazz to stay with the Chris Pauls, the Devin Bookers, the Jamal Murrays, the Damian Lillards, etc. of the world? Are the Jazz better suited to do that than they were in the playoffs, because it was a real major issue for the team, and it cost them. It cost them in the postseason, and they didn't really address it directly in the offseason. They have to hope that bringing Favors in has a secondary effect that allows the Jazz players to stay on the perimeter, stay glued to their guy, not have to defend the pick and roll with an extra player. They can just go man-to-man, have two guys. They're not going to be switchy at all. They're going to still play that drop coverage. But are they able to do a better job of sticking with shooters and avoiding dribble penetration? That's what the Jazz are having to look at, and that's what the offseason was about, and that has to be one of the big questions for the team. And now we're going to get a chance to see that coming up on Saturday against the Phoenix Suns. Not really any major additions for the Jazz. You'll probably see Udoka Azubuike. You'll probably see Elijah Hughes get some minutes in these games. I'll be curious if we see Trent Forrest, the kid from Florida State. I think there's a little bit more riding on him than there were the two-way players last year with Justin Wright Foreman and Jarrell Brantley. Of course, Jarrell is back with the team. Justin Wright Foreman has not signed with anyone, but he's not coming back to the Jazz. Maybe he comes back with the Stars next season. We'll see. But it didn't seem like there was a very strong connection there by the end of the season between the Jazz and Justin Wright Foreman. So we'll see what his future ends up holding. I haven't even seen him at training camp with anything, with anybody, I should say. So I think that's probably a little bit telling about what his future is. Maybe he ends up playing overseas unless he can sign with a G League team somewhere else. So that's your preseason. The Jazz do have one more game against the Clippers coming up on the road. That's December 17th. That's a week from this Thursday. And then they'll have 6 days off before they take on the Portland Trail Blazers for the season opener on the road. And it'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how the Jazz play on the road again against a high-scoring guard who they struggled with last season. Damian Lillard lit the Jazz up for something like 42.5 points per game in their three meetings. Though I looked it up this morning because I wrote an article, and I'll talk about it in just a minute. Jazz played better against Portland last year than I'd remembered them playing. For some reason, I thought the Jazz had lost two of the three meetings or worse. The Jazz actually took two of those three meetings. So even though Dame was so good, the Jazz did go 2-1 against Portland last year. Remember, they added Robert Covington this offseason from the Houston Rockets. They re-signed Enes Kanter from Boston, or they brought him back from Boston. He seemed happy about that. So that should be a pretty good Portland team. I don't think they're great. I think they always have a guy who's expected to come in and kind of be their wing stopper that they've always wanted. Kent Bazemore was there. Maurice Harkless has been there. They drafted Nas Little from North Carolina, and he was supposed to be that guy. Like, they always have that guy who's supposed to be their defensive stopper to make life easy on Dame and CJ and open things up, and it never quite works the way they hope. So something's wrong in Portland on that sense, but they're talented. They should be really good, and Dame's just hitting his prime. So that's the season opener. We'll talk about the five games I think Jazz fans should be most excited about coming up this season. I made a quick list for you. Again, these games are just going to come so fast and furious. One of these is even a home-and-home back-to-back, or I should say a home game series of back-to-back games coming up on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. But my first game is the season opener against Portland. I think it's going to be interesting. We're going to get that same test of the Jazz perimeter defense. You'll get Yusuf Nurkic back. You're going to see if Dame continues to pick up where he left off. Remember, they made that big push in the bubble to make the playoffs. Struggled, obviously, against the Lakers in the first round, but the Lakers, I think, were a much better roster than we gave them credit for through most of the season. Second game I'm excited for the Jazz to see is against the Phoenix Suns, who I mentioned they're going to play twice coming up in the preseason. See what Chris Paul looks like. My theory on Chris Paul, and I think there's a lot backing this up, is, you know, he was awesome in New Orleans, and there weren't any expectations, and he and David West carried that team to make the playoffs, and he was an MVP candidate, and he was awesome. And then he got traded to the Clippers, and you thought, okay, how many championships is this Lob City team going to have with Blake and DeAndre Jordan, and everything's going to work out right? And they went out and got Doc Rivers, and they never really lived up to the expectations. They had that one season where they beat San Antonio in the playoffs, and that was cool. And then, you know, they lost to the Jazz, and that blew them up. Like, you shouldn't lose to a Gordon Hayward-led Jazz team, considering Rudy Gobert had never played in the playoffs. Like, there's an absolute, they lost a Game 7 at home by, like, 20 points. You should not lose those games when you have that much talent. And I know Blake wasn't on the roster at that point. He had hurt his toe. But the Jazz played most of that series without Rudy Gobert before we recognized how good Rudy was. You know, 35-year-old Joe Johnson carried the Jazz in that series. That was such a bad loss, and I think that's kind of what Chris Paul's career has been. Because he goes to Houston, and they struggle, and yeah, they have an opportunity to make the finals, and they come up short despite having a big lead against the Golden State Warriors, and then they go ice cold in that one game where they needed to hit a 1-3, and they missed like 17 or whatever it was in a row. And then Kevin Durant gets hurt, and they should have had an opportunity to easily skate past the Warriors that year, and they couldn't find a way to do it, and Toronto ended up proving that they could win. Like, I think Chris Paul does really well with teams that don't have huge expectations, which is what happened last season in Oklahoma City. Everyone thought, okay, this is just a wasted season. They're going to trade Chris and get as many assets as they could, which they ended up doing. They just waited a year to get there. And they were a fun team, and they were cool. And Chris Paul's, the culture that he brought was really good there. Does that culture follow him to Phoenix now? Or does it come back to this team that has expectations because you've got Devin Booker, who was an all-star, you've got DeAndre Ayton, who was a number one overall pick, you've got some talented pieces around them. Does Chris Paul maximize that, or does he kind of fall back to being the weird culture guy who leadership is clearly kind of an issue with? Like, he likes it, but maybe wants too much of it. He's really hard on his teammates. How does a young guy like Ayton react to that? Can Monty Williams control that locker room? Devin Booker, who's been fiery before, can he handle Chris Paul trying to take over those leadership reins? What does losing Ricky Rubio mean? What does losing Aaron Baines mean? I think they changed a lot of their culture. So it's not a guarantee that they're awesome next year, but maybe they're good. They did add Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder can be fiery too. I like Jay a lot, but we'll see how he responds with Chris Paul. I think there's a few more question marks with Phoenix than we've given them credit for, but if it works, I think it makes total sense, and they can be a really good roster. So that was my second game on my list of five games Jazz fans should be excited for. That's on New Year's Eve. The next day, as I mentioned, this home-and-home the Jazz play, or back-to-back home games, the Jazz play the Los Angeles Clippers. Jazz last season won 2 of 3 against LA. I think they had their best win of the season last year in Los Angeles. A couple of games after trading for Jordan Clarkson, he came out and scored 19 in that game, and it was like very apparent that he was going to be a fit on the roster. Remember, Donovan Mitchell had that huge dunk in the fourth quarter after blowing past Kawhi Leonard off the baseline. That was the sign of how good the Jazz could be, and maybe it was more of a sign of how dysfunctional or imperfect that Clippers roster was. And they lost JaMychal Green. They lost Montrezl Harrell. He went to the Lakers. They did bring in Serge Ibaka, who was way better in Toronto last year than I think a lot of people recognize. Serge was good, and he should come in and help this team, but you're asking Tyronn Lue to do a lot to fix the culture that Doc Rivers couldn't figure out last season. And there's pressure on them because the Lakers got a lot better, and that window's going to close probably pretty quickly for the Clippers if they don't win this season or if it's not working well this season. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that pressure. That's my third game. Fourth game, Jazz rematching against the Denver Nuggets, January 17th at Denver. Can the Jazz get some revenge for their playoff loss? Should have won that series. I think they feel very confident they would have had they had Bojan Bogdanović. Denver, despite making the Western Conference Finals and beating the Jazz and beating the Clippers, lost Jeremy Grant. They lost Mason Plumlee. They lost some good depth in the front court, and Grant, I think, was a pretty important piece because he was able to guard Donovan Mitchell while Jamal Murray kind of had to guard nobody. You know, Jamal Murray could go hide on the Jazz worst offensive player and not have to do a whole lot, which allowed him to score 50 points a game in the playoffs against the Jazz. So when they lose that versatile defensive player, you put more pressure on Jokic, you put more pressure on Murray. They're going to get Will Barton back and Gary Harris back and healthy, and those two are good defenders. But do they have enough? They're asking Michael Porter Jr. to do a lot. They're probably investing in Bol Bol, which is a little bit crazy at this point. He had a good run in the bubble but didn't play hardly at all in the playoffs. So we'll see. We'll see if that ends up working for them. And then finally, the measuring stick game for the Jazz coming up against the Los Angeles Lakers on February 24th. It's the only time the Jazz play the Lakers in this first half of the season schedule. And it's a measuring stick game. Dennis Lindsay last week said one of the reasons why the Jazz went out and signed Derek Favors was because they look back at games like they had against the Lakers on December 4th here in Salt Lake City, and they got blown out by 25, and they said that was the only team that made us feel like we were overmatched. They didn't have the size to deal with the Lakers, so they wanted more size. They wanted to do some of the defensive things that they like to do better, and they think Favors addresses those, and the Jazz should have a pretty good sense of how good of a team they are. when they take on LA and LeBron coming up on February 24th here in Salt Lake City. And hopefully we're getting some more fans back in the arena. It'd be fun to watch if the crowd can be, you know, half full. I'm not sure if that's realistic at all. But that should be pretty fun to watch if they can get that back. Otherwise, I think that's kind of the keys to the schedule. A couple of weird quirks. They have a 7-game road trip beginning on January 3rd. They go San Antonio to Brooklyn to the Knicks to Milwaukee to Detroit to Cleveland, and then they finish in Washington. How many of those teams are actually going to be good? San Antonio should be okay. You know, they might get to play in the play-in tournament by the end of the season. Brooklyn's going to be really good. The Knicks are going to be terrible. Milwaukee should be good. Pistons are going to be terrible. Cavs are going to be terrible. Wizards, we don't know. We don't know what Russell Westbrook's going to do. If you can go 4-3 on any road trip, you're in good shape. So a 7-game roadie over 10 days is going to be tough for the Jazz, but we'll see if they can do it. And then they've got a 6-game homestand like 4 days later. They play the final game of that road trip on the 13th. I guess it's 6 days later. They start their 6-game homestand against the New Orleans Pelicans. And this one's really weird because they go New Orleans on Tuesday. They play New Orleans again at home on Thursday. Then they get the Warriors on Saturday. They get the Knicks on Tuesday. So a nice break there in the middle of the season. And they're done with playing the Knicks. And then they have back-to-back games at home again against the Dallas Mavericks on Wednesday the 27th and Friday the 29th. So some of these weird scheduling quirks that we've just never seen before. You'll have a home-and-home with a team where you play back-and-back, back-to-back. You'll never see both your home games against one team being played on over 3 nights. I think that's going to be a little bit strange. It's going to be a little crazy, but it should be fun to watch. It should lead to some interesting dynamics that we just haven't seen in the NBA. And if you like new, which I do, I like just seeing new things, different things. I think it should end up being a fun season to watch. Otherwise, I think that's it for the schedule. The Jazz did leave an extra roster spot open. They signed 14 players. I think if you look at the Jazz depth chart, the question mark is really going to come what they do in the backcourt. Now, they've got bodies, but Mike Conley's the only true point guard on the roster. Donovan Mitchell excelled in that role somewhat last season. Clearly, they're banking on him to come in and fill that backup role and play 14 minutes a night, 18 minutes a night, whatever it is, behind Mike Conley. And then you have Jordan Clarkson step in and play 30 minutes at the shooting guard. Joe Ingles can handle some backup point guard minutes as well. He can play backup shooting guard. We'll see if Mione cracks the rotation for the Jazz. There's certainly some talk about what he can do defensively, joining the team. Does Elijah Hughes push his way into the lineup at any point? That's kind of the backcourt, small forward rotation for the Jazz. Otherwise, the bigs, it's just going to be hard to be on the floor. It's going to be Bojan Bogdanović, Rudy Gobert, Derek Favors, and then probably a few minutes of George Niang every night, unless they feel like Juwan Morgan's defensive versatility, his ability to be a small ball five or play with Rudy where he was pretty good last year when he was at the four and then can hit the corner three. If the Jazz like that and the size he brings, maybe he takes some of George Niang's minutes. I think that's kind of the logjam that they have there. That's going to be questionable for the team. I'll be curious to see how that plays out. Those are kind of the roster battles I'm looking at. But otherwise, it's Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, Bojan, and Rudy Gobert is your starting five. Your sixth and seventh men are Jordan Clarkson and Derek Favors. Eighth man is Joe Ingles. I don't know how else you get in the rotation beyond those guys. I don't think Udoka Azubuike plays a whole lot. Like I said, I don't think Hughes plays a whole lot. Mieyoni's not going to play a whole lot. George Niang's going to get good minutes as a shooter, but they're, you know, it's going to be 8 to 10 minutes a game, I think, at most, and it's going to depend on foul trouble and some matchups. It's just, it's a good roster. And the Jazz are pretty deep and they're pretty set. And a lot of these guys deserve 28 to 34 minutes. It's going to be hard to find minutes behind those guys unless there's an injury. So we'll see. The Jazz have only 14 players on the roster, like I mentioned. They leave that last roster spot open. They could use a point guard. They do have Trent Forrest on a two-way contract who does some of the things I think you could look at other guys to bring in. I know Shaq Harrison's a popular name Jazz fans have liked. Trent Forrest and Shaq Harrison are basically the same player. Trent Forrest went to Florida State. 6'4", 6'5", rangy, really good defensive guard, doesn't shoot straight, really struggles, but really struggles to score, struggles when he puts the ball on the ground, because if you stay in front of him, he has to pull it for a mid-range shot, and it's just not a part of his game, which again is just Shaq Harrison. So we'll see if the Jazz say, hey, we think we can cover it with a 10-day contract if there's an injury, or if they leave that roster spot to sign somebody in case they realize, hey, we really need a backup point guard. I think those are some of the questions for the Jazz. that I would have to address going into the season. Otherwise, that's what I have for you today. Let me answer your questions that you've tweeted at me. Again, make sure you follow me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Appreciate you as always for doing that. And we'll try and get to these questions. Look like we got a handful here. Cameron Young, 15th roster spot. What's going on with it? Keeping it open for a G League call-up or if someone gets waived? I think it is for in case somebody gets waived. And the Jazz have done that before and had a lot of success. Joe Ingles is obviously the most obvious name that the Clippers just didn't have a roster spot for. They waived him. The Jazz brought him in, used him pretty sparingly early on, and now he's making, you know, $12, $14 million a season and has been a fixture on the roster. And I wouldn't expect that to have the same impact with if they can sign somebody this year, but I think that's the hope. You find somebody who's in a roster spot and a roster crunch, and they get waived the last day of camp, and you sign them and say, hey, you're worth the minimum contract, we like you, and we're going to bring you in. But the Jazz are also trying to not go over the salary cap, or into the luxury tax, I should say, so they'll probably try and avoid paying that. So I don't think there's a guaranteed answer that they finish that, or that they fill out that roster and get that 15th spot. I'm not sure they do. I think they may like to have that versatility going into the season, and that way they can also bring a player back if they had to in a trade, an extra body, whatever they needed to. Jeremy Allen, when will the Jazz Star Wars nights be? G League info, are the Stars playing at all this year? The hope is to get the G League playing. Remember, they went out and signed all those kind of college stars that were going to go in and be one-and-done players in college this year. They brought a couple of those kids that were going to go the G League route. So I think they'd like to highlight that that's a success story and get these guys playing when that actually starts. Clearly, it's not firing up when the Jazz season starts. Otherwise, we would have heard more about it. Otherwise, the details are pretty scant. As far as Star Wars night, what you could do this year, this is goofy, but you could do May the 4th. And, you know, we say May the 4th be with you because the regular season runs to, what, mid-May, right? It's like May 16th or something like that is when the regular season ends. So everyone, instead of doing it in November or December when they've traditionally done Star Wars night, you could hope that you're going to have fans back in the arenas by the end of the season. You could do May the 4th. You could hopefully have people vaccinated. You could hopefully have, you know, 5, 10, 15,000 people in these arenas at that point. And if you wanted to do a Star Wars night, you could do something more fun like that. Rob on Twitter, where do you rank the Jazz in the West? Also with Fave, how do you match up with the Lakers now? Lakers are kind of interesting because they got smaller in the offseason. So all this push to get big and everyone signed all these, you know, big players, Mason Plumlee and Myers Leonard and Derek Favors and all these kind of backup centers got money. And then the Lakers said, well, we're going to go smaller anyways. We're not going to go with two bigs. And maybe Marc Gasol start. They remember they went out and got Marc Gasol. But maybe they're going to go smaller and play Montrezl Harrell more and have Anthony Davis at the five and then Harrell at the four, or Harrell comes off the bench and LeBron starts at the four. Like, I don't think there's a guarantee that they stay big. So that matchup with the Lakers of being big might not be as advantageous as we once thought it was going to be. But I do think Faves matches up pretty well with Anthony Davis, certainly better than any other player the Jazz have. So I think you're happy to have him there as far as that matchup goes. Otherwise, you got to hope that, I guess, the Lakers are tired because they played 70 days ago their last game, or 90 days ago by the time the season starts. You hope that that turnaround is just a little too quick for them. They can't play their bodies all that much. They end up not with a one seed. They have to play a better team in the playoffs, and you can avoid them. Like, that's your hope against the Lakers. I think that's everyone's hope against the Lakers. How do they match up in the West? I think they passed Denver because I think Denver had a really bad offseason. But we'll see. Maybe Bol Bol takes a big leap and Michael Porter Jr. turns into, you know, a bigger Jason Tatum and is really good. He's not going to be that way defensively, but he can be really dangerous as a scorer and a rebounder. They brought Paul Millsap back. They can still be really good. But I think they passed Denver. They're much better than Houston. I don't think the Houston thing's going to work. I think they're going to have to trade James Harden. Dallas should get better. I like some of what Dallas did in the draft, and Luke is just going to continue to get better. We'll see if Kristaps' knee's healthy. They should be in that conversation. Portland could be in that conversation. I talked about what they added. Otherwise, I'm not sure. Golden State is obviously dangerous. Clay having the Achilles injury is awful, but Steph's going to come back and be really good. Draymond's a year older, but should still be pretty good. I like some of the pieces they went and added in the offseason to make up for what they were missing. They're going to be good. Steph is a really good player. Draymond's good. They have talent. So they're going to be in competition with the Jazz, I think, right there as well. So I would say the Jazz are still competing for home court advantage in the first round. They entered the bubble with the 4 seed. I think you're comfortable if that's where they are at the end of the year. I don't know if they're better than the Clippers. We'll see if that culture gets fixed. I know they're not better than the Lakers. And then there's enough teams between who I mentioned, Denver, Golden State, Dallas, Portland, to think that one of those teams probably has a better season than the Jazz. So that's three teams that are going to be better. Jazz, you hope, are fourth and not fifth or sixth and having to start the season on the road. Or the postseason on the road. I think that's about where you're hoping. But, you know, they're right in the thick of it. They're right in the middle of it, and that's probably pretty realistic unless Donovan Mitchell takes this enormous leap forward and continues to be the guy he was in the playoffs and averages 28 or 30 points a game, which is actually not as outrageous as it sounds because that's what Dwayne Wade did in his third or fourth season. Damian Lillard's doing it now. Like, guys get up to that point, and Donovan's incredibly good at basketball. So maybe he is able to make that jump and get up there. Dave says, which rookie or second-year player do you think has the best shot at cracking the rotation, assuming everyone stays healthy? I like this question because there's a lot of answers, and I'll just lay out how everyone gets into the rotation. The Jazz feel like they don't have a good enough 3-and-D guard or wing, and Mieone cracks the rotation because he shoots well like he did in the G League and can move his feet and is long enough and has the physical profile to crack the rotation. That's how Mie gets there. Elijah Hughes gets there as a rookie because he's a clone of Rodney Hood, because he can create his own shot, he can put the ball on the floor a little bit. With spacing in Quinn Snyder's offense, he's really hot as a three-point shooter with NBA range. And the Jazz like him as a floor spacer better than some of their other options on the wing because can do a little bit more. That's how he gets in the rotation. Jarrell Brantley, I think it's going to be hard just because he's on a two-way deal. Clearly, if the Jazz thought he was closer, they would have given him one of those guaranteed contracts and left Elijah Hughes to sign a two-way deal. They didn't. So Jarrell's opportunity to get in is he shoots well. He moves his feet better than the other perimeter bigs. They feel like they want his strength and his size and his playmaking, and he steps in. Again, I think that's going to be hard to do. Udoka Azubuike breaks in because the Jazz like Derek Favors at the four and getting more minutes than they had planned behind Bojan Bogdanovic, and Azubuike's so good that he allows you to do the same thing that you do with Rudy Gobert, which is catch lobs, set screens, play defense, protect the rim, you know, score 65% of his shots when he's at the rim, you know, can complete those field goals, and is worth playing for 10 minutes. And you develop him because you don't sign a deal with Rudy Gobert, and you're worried he has to play real minutes next year. Like, that's how Udoka Azubuike cracks the schedule. Or cracks the rotation, I should say. That's how each of those first or second-year guys gets in. I would put in Trent Forrest as the Jazz realize, hey, they need a backup point guard. He plays really well in the preseason. Jazz like his defense, and they say, hey, we could use a guy that size who's unselfish, who's pretty good putting the ball on the floor, has really good kind of pace for running a team, and his defense is better than anyone else in the backcourt. It's probably not right now at this point. It's hard to be a rookie and be good at defense, but he's got some of those traits. That's how each of the young first or second year guys gets on the floor. That's what I would say. McCade Pearson, why are the Jazz going to pay the tax this year, or do you think they'll trade one of their main eight guys to get under? I think they're going to pay the tax because they feel like they're in a point where they can compete to win in the playoffs. And that was kind of always the promise that Dennis Lindsay made, that the Millers had made. And hopefully Ryan Smith is taking over, that if the Jazz feel like they can be good, they're going to keep up with that push. That if they feel like it's worth paying the tax this year and it's worth winning a playoff series or two, or ideally, you know, three and getting to the finals, it's worth that extra money you spend because it pays itself back. That's why the Jazz would pay it. If they feel like they can't, would they make a move? Sure. If they're not good this year and they've got some of these deals that are worth $8 to $12 million that don't fit on the roster or are too repetitive, whether that's Royce or Joe or Jordan. And I should have mentioned Jordan Clarkson, by the way, in my rotation. I should have mentioned that earlier a little bit more. But yeah, there's just, it's, if they're too repetitive and those guys are making too much money and you can get less money back and get under the salary tax, certainly. And Dennis Lindsay's actually talked about doing that. He said they recognize they have tools to fix the salary cap if they need to. I'm sure they've got trades sitting on the table if they want to get rid of those, if they have to. Those are certainly options. And final question from Mitch. He says, any word on Rudy Gobert's extension? Why the delay? I mean, I think it's probably... you know, the simplest explanation is the right explanation. It's that the two sides are further apart on the negotiation than they hope they would be to enter the season. Jazz probably have a number that they feel pretty confident and comfortable paying and don't want to go over, understanding the implications it's going to have in future seasons. And Rudy Gobert and his camp says, I'm worth X amount of dollars, And we know we can get that much next season as an unrestricted free agent. And we're going to wait if we have to wait. And we're going to see who blinks first. And maybe neither of them blinks. And I said this when the Jazz drafted Udoka Azubuike and signed Derek Favors. Like, it felt to me like they were putting in place a contingency plan in case Rudy's not on the roster long term. And that's possible. You know, Rudy is the best in the NBA and the best in the world at what he does. Is what he does so irreplaceable that it's worth $35 million a year? In my opinion, it's harder for the Jazz to replace Donovan Mitchell than it is Rudy Gobert, because you went out and you drafted Udoka Azubuike, who does some of the same things and won't do them right now at the same level, but at just 21 years old, you hope in 2 years, 3 years, he is doing them at a very high level, if that's still as valuable as it is in today's NBA game. And if you have to have a stopgap to get there, or you just like what he brings, Derek Favors fills that role for Rudy Gobert in 25 minutes a night, and then you go out and you sign a backup center this offseason to give you shooting or give you a difference, or Juwan Morgan fills those minutes, or, you know, like, clearly the Jazz are thinking about this in a long-term perspective. They're not just going to bend over backwards and give Rudy Gobert whatever he asked for right away. Like, they're not going to break the back of the team to give Rudy everything. And I think that's probably the smart move, but it could make the season really difficult if that's hanging over the team all season long, because there's going to be rumors about, do you trade Rudy in March before the deadline if it feels like you're not going to get a deal worked out in the offseason? If he goes into unrestricted free agency and costs $250 million, you're probably not going to pay him that. Are you satisfied if he leaves for nothing? Or did you feel like you needed to trade him prematurely to get those assets back? Like, all those are real questions. And I suspect that we could get a deal done still and report on that before the regular season starts. Or you may end the year without a deal. And it's going to be tricky and it's going to be, you know, difficult for the Jazz. And look, understanding the injury concern, not that he has a lot of prior injuries, but he's getting a little older. He's played in the NBA for a while now. He's racked up big minutes. His efficiency is starting to drop a little bit from a couple of years ago. He didn't win Defensive Player of the Year this last year, though that's, you know, that's subjective. There's a reason to not sign Rudy Gobert to the most money right away that you can. It's a gamble if you do it. So I get why the Jazz are handling things the way they are. I think it makes sense. I think it's tricky, but they certainly prepared themselves in case of a worst-case scenario, which is Rudy leaves or forces himself out or doesn't want to be here. And I've heard nothing about Rudy not wanting to be in Utah, but if it did get to that situation, and you always have to say what's the worst that could happen, you still have Derek Favors and you drafted Udoka Azubuike, and ideally you have, between those two and Juwan Morgan, you have 48 minutes at the center position if you need to this season in case of an emergency. So I think that's what's happened with Rudy Gobert and his contract. I think that's where the Jazz are. We just hit the 30-minute mark. I'm going to wrap it up here. Appreciate everyone tuning in. As always, follow me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Welcome, everybody. I've seen a bunch of new followers jump on recently. So big thanks to everyone who's done that on Twitter. Hopefully you got your question asked. And if not, make sure and ask coming up for later this week or next week when I record the next episode. Otherwise, enjoy the preseason debut and catch all your coverage with me at Ben's Hoops on Twitter and at KSLSports.com.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.